driving around, heard the local Nazi station talking about at the Reagan funeral that there were so many people that wanted to pay the respects to the greatest American of all history that they had to extend the viewing hours to make room for all the people, the hundreds of billions of people that are all going to stand in line if it's 150 degrees for 5 years. All these billions of people want to get a glance at a coffin. And it made me wonder. You just know they lied about that, too. You just know they did. They could have announced up front, due to the probable demand, we're going to have some long hours to view the casket. But no, it's the old mislead. They said, we're going to have viewing hours and, you know, cut it off at 8:30. And then a couple days later, oh, due to the tremendous demand of the billions of people. Yeah, now they got to extend. You know, it's like a band comes into town. In the old days, Led Zeppelin show up. They'd sell out the Forum in Los Angeles 2 nights. Well, first of all, the head research that told them they're going to sell out 6 nights. So they don't call. Well, yeah, they probably did call the Forum and reserve the 6, but they only announced 2 of the shows. And then when those shows sell out in 3 hours, then they say, oh, we've announced a 3rd show. And then when that sells out in 3-4 hours, we announce a 4th show. Who knew Zeppelin was this big? And then they announce, now there's a 5th show and a 6th show. So everyone that wants to see can see. It's, you know, they knew they were going to sell out all 6 nights. Bingo, duh. No, they just announced the 2 and then squeaked the others in to, you know, not that they needed it. At 73, they were the biggest band in the world, so there was just not a problem. But that's not what you ought to do at a funeral, to play those kinds of monkey games at a funeral. But that's what they did. Because of the extreme demand of all the billions. Oh, and they're all ages. There are children who came to see the legend. There are old people. There are women. There are men. There are white people. There are, I don't know if there's any black people or not. All these people. Oh, the billions of people. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was popular with almost half the country. Fine. Set your hours up. Can someone explain why we're doing this 24/7 thing? I just don't understand, after the 10-year wait, why we're having to rehash everything, and of course it's only the good stuff. Have you heard much about Iran-Contra? You probably heard it mentioned, but you know they're going to talk about all the good stuff, none of the bad stuff. And with Clinton, what are they going to do? When Clinton dies in 30, 40 years, they're going to say, Bill Clinton, the man that was impeached because Monica sucked his cock, died today. That's what they're going to... With Reagan, it's, oh, the greatest in the whole history of the whole today. Yeah, but with Clinton, that's what they're going to do. President Clinton, who was impeached because of Monica, died today. The sons of bitches. Even though Clinton gave us 8 years of peace and prosperity and paid off a whole lot of the Reagan and Bush debt. No, he's not going to get any historical perspective out of that. You know, the media is going to continue to Nazify itself more and more and more. Because right now, what, there's seven... If you read that book or saw the film, Orwell Rolls Over in His Grave, they talk about how there's only 7 corporations that own everything now. And pretty soon that'll be down to 3. You know, Viacom will buy General Electric or something, and they'll be down to 2 or 3. And they're all going to be Clinton haters, and they're all going to be Bush lovers and Nazi bastards, and they're all going to be for tax cuts and screw the blacks and screw the old people and screw the health care pensions and all that. Just to go right in for the greed. Greed, greed, greed. Greed is Republican. Republican is greed. There's just no other way around it. But we can't get the truth from the media anymore. The lying bastards will only give you what will make them more money, and what will make them more money is their version of the truth. Imagine that. They look at something and say, what will make the most money? That's the truth. And then they put it up there and sell you that. Again, with the Orwell, they talk about Kobe, Michael Jackson, Scott Peterson, all that. Meanwhile, Bush rewrote the tax code so the super rich pay zero. You know how much zero is? Zero is zero. The super, super rich, the ultra billionaires. Remember that one guy, he was a friend of Nixon's. His last name, it was funny as hell name, Alpenalp, something like that. Anyway, he invented the aerosol can. He invented the little white thing that goes on top of the hairspray, and he got a half a penny for everything in the country that sprayed. So hell, just bug spray made him a billionaire. Now you add in whatever shampoo and everything in the whole world that might ever spray, and that guy got a half. That's the kind of guy that's getting the tax breaks now while me and you are paying more and getting less. Does anyone care?
Next will be Birdstone. Lauren Venosa was there with John Service watching them load in. That's Stuart Elliott's girlfriend. Here's Tap Dancer, then Eddington, and then Smarty Jones. There's Lauren Venosa, Stuart Elliott's fiance. And now for the call of the 136 Belmont Stakes. Here's Tom Durkin.
Smarty Jones takes his spot in post nine, moments away from the start. Will he take his place in racing history? We'll see. They're off in the 136 Belmont. Smarty Jones got off to a good beginning today. Eddington not off particularly well. Rock Hard 10 is showing speed this afternoon. He's right up there with Smarty Jones, who's on the outside. Purge comes through on the rail, and Eddington will be on the outside of Smarty Jones as they move into the clubhouse turn. And then it's Cayman now, who's running fifth and angles over toward the inside. Birdstone in between horses sixth, Royal Assault to seventh. Master David is reined in to run back in eighth position, and Long Shot Tap Dancer trails the field. Purge is the leader. Rock Hard 10 right up on the pace today, and Stuart Elliott trying to find a comfort zone there with Smarty Jones. They're in the clear on the outside third, not far behind Jerry Bailey and Eddington running along in fourth. Then they're followed by Royal Assault and Birdstone on the outside. The opening quarter went in 24 1/5 seconds. The half, 48 3/5 seconds. The pace is fairly soft, and Smarty Jones has taken the lead as they begin their long journey down the Belmont backstretch. But he's not going to get a breather. It is Eddington to press him all the way, and Rock Hard 10 looms large just in behind the lead. He's only 2 lengths behind Smarty Jones now. There's a break of another 2.5 lengths back, and Purge down toward the inside. He's working harder to be fourth. Birdstone's alongside him. The field now moving for the 5 furlong marker. Smarty Jones, a challenge on the inside from Rock Hard 10. There's 5 furlongs to go, just a minute from the wire, and Smarty Jones has to hold on to that lead for just 1 minute more. Rock Hard 10 is pressing him from the inside. Eddington is working harder to stay within 2 lengths of the lead. Birdstone commences a rally. He's 6 lengths from the front. Purge has nothing left. Then farther back, it's Royal Assault, Master David, and Tap Dancer around the far turn, and it's Smarty Jones. He lets it out a notch to lead by a length and a half. Birdstone is coming up on the outside. Rock Hard 10 is toiling. He's now 3 lengths behind. They're coming to the top of the stretch. Smarty Jones is a 4-length lead. Birdstone is moving to be second on the outside. Rock Hard 10 is back to third. And Smarty Jones enters the stretch to the roar of 120,000. But Birdstone is going to make him earn it today. The whip is out on Smarty Jones. It's been 26 years. It's just 1 furlong away. Birdstone is an upside.
So this Triple Crown remains vacated for 26 long years, and this magical Triple Crown trail of Smarty Jones comes to a disheartening end in the final strides of the Belmont Stakes.
Hearts broken again in the final strides at the Belmont. They ganged up on him. Everybody took a shot at him. And Birdstone finally got there in the closing strides. Remember Birdstone, one of the few horses that had raced over this Belmont Oval. He won the Champagne Stakes, the biggest race for two-year-olds here in New York last year. He had sort of fallen on hard times this spring. In the Kentucky Derby, he lost his shoe, didn't run well. But he came back to the track where he'd had his greatest success. An upset, Smarty's bid for the Triple Crown, the first loss in Smarty Jones' career. It's the first Belmont victory for Nick Zito, the New Yorker, in 12 tries after finishing second 5 times. And Donna is with Stuart Elliott on Smarty Jones.
Stuart, I have to say I'm sorry for you, but I think all the viewers at home are going to be a little worried about Smarty Jones. Is he okay?
He's fine. He's fine. I mean, He ran. I don't know. That other horse just come and got him.
Looked like you were pressed throughout from both sides.
Yes, a little bit on both sides, but my horse was still just dragging me, and turned for home, and he went to run, and that horse just come and got us.
If you could put your finger on anything that caused the defeat today, could you say?
No. No.
Horse racing.
That's horse racing.
All those hearts broken at the same time across the land for something that wasn't 9/11 or an assassination or something serious. I can't remember when the whole country took a shot to the gut like that. Oh, it was so bad. The owner of the winning horse said, we feel awful. We know the crowd came to see Smarty Jones. So this poor lady, Mary Lou Whitney, her horse just won a Triple Crown race. She feels awful. I'll tell you, horse racing, what are you going to do?
Because it was part of my life, I'd like to say something about D-Day. I don't know how to say it any differently than I did in a book I wrote called My War. If you are young and not really clear what D-Day was, let me tell you, it was a day unlike any other. There have only been a handful of days since the beginning of time on which the direction the world was taking has been changed for the better in one 24-hour period by an act of man. June 6, 1944 was one of them. What the Americans, the British, and the Canadians were trying to do was get back a whole continent that had been taken from its rightful owners by Adolf Hitler's German army. It was one of the most monumentally unselfish things one group of people ever did for another. We all have days of our lives that stand out from the blur of days that have gone by, and the day I came ashore on Utah Beach, 4 days after the initial invasion, is one of mine. As we approached the French coast, there were small clouds of smoke and sudden eruptions as German artillery blindly lobbed shells over the hills behind the beach. They were hoping to hit U.S. troops or some of the massive amount of equipment piled up on the shore there. Row on row of dead American soldiers were laid out on the beach just above the high tide mark where it turned into weedy clumps of grass. They were covered with olive drab blankets, just their feet sticking out at the bottom, their GI boots sticking out. I remember their boots, all the same on boys, all so different. No one can tell the whole story of D-Day because no one knows it. Each of the 60,000 men who waded ashore that day knew a little part of the story too well. To them, the landing looked like a catastrophe. Each knew a friend shot through the throat, shot through a knee. Each knew names of five hanging dead on the barbed wire in the water 20 yards offshore. Three who lay unattended on the stony beach as the blood drained from holes in their bodies. They saw whole tank crews drowned when the tanks rumbled off the ramps of their landing craft and dropped into 20 feet of water. There were heroes here no one will ever know because they're dead. The heroism of others is known only to themselves. Across the channel, in Allied headquarters in England, the war directors, remote from the details of death, were exultant. They saw no blood, no dead, no dying. From the statistician's point of view, the invasion was a success. Statisticians were right. They always are. That's the damn thing about it. On each visit to the beaches over the years, I've wept. It's impossible to keep back the tears as you look across the rows of markers and think of the boys under them who died that day. Even if you didn't know anyone who died, your heart knows something that your brain does not. You weep. If you think the world is selfish and rotten, go to the cemetery at Colville-sur-Mer, overlooking Omaha Beach. See what one group of men did for another on D-Day, June 6, 1944.
Don't touch that dial. Though you don't have a dial because you're probably listening to this on the computer.